Welcome to the Business with Beers podcast. And this is the place where we help entrepreneurs expand their business, build their wealth, and generate passive income. I'm your host, Brian Beers, an entrepreneur who's on a mission to inspire growth from everyone around me. Remember that you need to take the actions others won't, and you can live the life that others don't. Please be sure to check out my weekly newsletter that now drops every Thursday. It includes one quote, one tweet, one podcast recommendation, plus some business and investing insight from me. It's short and it's sweet. My goal is to provide you with just a couple gold nuggets to help inspire your growth. Go to brianbeers.com to subscribe. Hello, everyone. I am excited today to bring you Andrea Waltz. She is the co-author of the best-selling book and one of my personal favorites, Go For No. Welcome to the show, Andrea.
Hey, Brian. It's so good to be with you.
Awesome. So to start, can you give me an idea of your journey from, you know, 18, 20 years old to kind of how did you come across to writing this book?
Yeah, did not start out as an expert in failure and rejection. That was definitely not part of my plans when I was very, very young. I wanted to be a crime scene investigator from, the time I was in high school. So my goal was I wanted to get a bachelor's degree in criminal justice, which I did. And as soon as I graduated, I went to the Orange County Sheriff's Department and met with them. And they were like, you know, we have no jobs for you, but we take unpaid interns. So if you want to just hang out and be unpaid for 2 or 3 years, maybe a position will come open at some point. And I was like, no, I love this idea of this profession, but I'm not that committed, apparently. I really wanted to make money. So simultaneously to going to college, I was working at a company called Lens Crafters, the eyeglass retailer. Mm-hmm. And they were happy to promote me into management. And I worked my way up and became one of the youngest managers in the company's history running. I was like a general manager. So I was running the laboratory side where they make the glasses and the retail side of the business and I started doing 2-day trainings for them. And training just became my absolute passion. I loved it. And that's where I met my husband, Richard, my now husband, Richard. And he was really the one who shared the Go For No story with me and convinced me that the path to success was not just by going for yes, it was by going for no.
Okay. So what does that mean? Can you, for listeners that haven't read the book, what does go for no mean?
Yes. So that is a great question. So Richard tells me this story about how he was selling suits for a living and he was failing horribly. And this district manager, a guy named Harold, was going to visit the store. And on the day that Harold was watching the store and watching everybody sell, Richard happened to have this great sale. And he sold this guy like $1,100 worth of clothing. And this goes back, you know, decades ago. So this is like probably $5,000 today.
Okay. Yeah.
He has this amazing sale. And Harold, instead of coming over and congratulating him, asks Richard, what did that customer say no to? And Richard was kind of mad because he's thinking that this guy's going to congratulate him like most sales managers do. And he had to admit, thinking about the sale, that customer didn't say no to anything. Everything that he showed that guy, the guy said yes to. And then Harold asked him the other really interesting question, which was, well, that if he never said no to anything, then how did you know he was done? How did you know he was done shopping, basically? And Richard had to admit that it was the only reason that customer became finished was that he was the one who ended the sale. He rang the guy up, sent him on his way. And this guy, Harold, was kind of the catalyst, the mentor, if you will, in Richard's career at this point, and basically told him, you know, you're a good salesperson, but you have a fear of the word no. If you can just get over that, I think you could be really great. And Richard made it his mission to start hearing no more often. He didn't know if he had what it took. He always says this. He says, I didn't know if I had what it took to succeed, but I knew I had what it took to fail. I could fail more often. I could hear no more often. I could show more products and services to customers and have them tell me no. And by doing that, he recognized the idea that when you hear no more often, you put yourself in opportunities to hear yes. So that's what Go For No is all about. It comes from this little story. But it really is based on the principle that if you want more yeses in your life, you need to be willing to hear more noes. It's like if you're a Girl Scout selling cookies door to door, which is the easiest sale in the whole world, right? Because everybody wants them. they're well branded. It's great. But if you want more yeses, you got to knock on more doors, and you've got to be willing to hear more no's.
Yep. That's amazing. Yeah. How did you know he was done shopping, right? Because he could have kept asking. He could have got a summer outfit or a fall outfit or something for his wife or kids. And yeah, I think a lot of times salespeople, we just assume like we're spending it like it's our money and we're assuming we're them. And then we mentally stop at some point versus continuing to ask the questions to figure out, at what point is it truly a no? And they're good. Their need has been, satisfied. That's great. So why do people have a fear of rejection?
So I think it's a couple things. I think one, it's how we were raised. And Sarah Blakely, who's the billionaire founder of the company Spanx, which is like the undergarments for women. And now it's actually, now it was started as undergarments. Now it's all kinds of clothing. But she's a billionaire and very, very, very successful. And her dad used to come home, see her and her brother at the end of the day. And he would ask them, what did you guys fail at today? And he would encourage them to fail. He would encourage them to try stuff and fall on their face and screw up, because he knew that when they did that, they would grow from it, and they would learn, and they would end up having other successes. So he was a very big proponent of that. And I think there are other people who grow up, and this is the majority of us, certainly is the case for Richard and myself and most people in society. And I hear from people all over the world that message me on the app, on our website. I mean, just in every country. Failure is not seen as something to be proud of. You should be ashamed. You should be embarrassed about it. When I say failure, we put it in that same bucket as rejection, because rejection is, a failure. It's getting a no. And so there's this shame attached to it. So we're all raised with this idea that you don't want to be rejected and don't screw up and all of this stuff. And then you couple that with the fact that there's the biology behind it, that it is built into our DNA to not be rejected. But studies have shown that when you experience rejection, it feels like physical pain. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, I can feel when I get a big no, it's like a gut punch. It's like, oh, that would have been so great, And there's that loss, and it's a physical feeling. So when you add all of this together, society, how we were raised, if you were raised in a household that was more a no household than a yes household, it's no wonder that we're here and we are constantly struggling it and constantly second guessing it. And I think the biggest challenge, the thing that happens, is that, when you get rejected, your brain automatically asks this question. And the question is, what does this mean? And because we interpret everything, right? We interpret the meaning of something. And a lot of times we do it instantaneously. You see somebody walking down the street, they're in a scary looking kind of jacket, coat. They look out of place. Your brain is trying to figure out, is this person dangerous? What does this mean? Is this a threat? What does this mean if they are dressing this way? And so your brain is doing all these calculations all the time. Well, it's the same thing with rejection. So your brain thinks, what does this mean? Well, you just got rejected. But your brain also thinks you're an idiot and doesn't think that you know what you're doing and wants to keep you safe. So your brain is going to tell you, oh, you got rejected. This is very bad. Don't take such risks. Don't ask for things. Don't be pushy. Someone might throw you out of the tribe and you'll be left to hunt and gather on your own, and you will surely die. So what is losing a sale or something like that, or somebody saying no to your pay raise or didn't give you the job opportunity or whatever it is, becomes this apocalyptic situation in our minds and feels that way often physically. So it's a lot to deal with. And the antidote, of course, is just to change our thinking.
Yep. And a lot of it's like disconnecting someone rejecting whatever product or service or whatever you're trying to sell from your like personal self-worth. And it's like a lot of people have it connected where they say no to like, whatever, I'm trying to sell something. That means they don't want me and they don't like me. And it's like, they take it personally, where in reality, it's just the product or the service, the timing or whatever it is, right? But we sometimes see it in parallel instead of these two completely separate things.
Yeah, 100%. And it's funny because there are some things where, I mean, you could be selling medical supplies. You didn't design the supply. or the piece of equipment. Yep. You have nothing to do with it. And yet, I think there is a certain amount, especially the personality, I think, of salespeople in particular. They want that validation, and they do love those accolades. And I think we all do to some extent. But so you have that as one thing. And then to your point about the validation, then you have people who the thing is them. It is their artwork. It's their book. It's their literally their physical selves going in for it, right? To audition. And somebody's like, no, you can't play the leading man. Like, not in a million years. Yep. Right. And so those rejections really sting, and they're really painful. But again, you do have to detach yourself. And it's one of the big things that we end up talking about. This is nothing in Go For No in the book really deals with all of the emotional nuances to dealing with this. And a big thing is to help people not to take rejection personally. And it actually has to do with you really embracing the fact that other people have their opinions like you. And the more you can do that, the more you can embrace and come to love that other people have opinions, then that's a great thing. But you can't also, you can't get the validation you want. You can't believe when somebody tells you you're fabulous and they give you a yes, but then try to ignore no. So the best thing to do is detach from all of it. Don't take any of it personally. Mm. You can't take the good stuff personally. You can't take the bad stuff personally. It's just, that's that other person's opinion.
Okay. Yeah. Try to hold back the dopamine hits or whatever. When you get the yes and you feel good about yourself, because then you might feel as equally bad when you don't get the yes, right? And you get the no. So that part is, so walk me through some of the strategies, or what are some of the ways that you guys, because you guys do some coaching, some training on all this stuff, I think with large companies, kind of what's the framework that you teach?
Yeah. So, well, it's interesting because there's no step-by-step process. It's kind of like taking a cloud there, and there's all of these different concepts. And when we, like, for example, we have an online course and it's modular. And so I know people come in and a lot of it will apply to them, especially the mindset stuff, which applies to everybody. And then some of the more strategic stuff will apply to some people, not others. So I'll give you like an example to your point is a big part of Go For No is upping your quantity, the number of times that you're going out talking to people and sharing your story and having people and collecting those yes, no decisions. That's a part of being, somebody who's executing Go For No effectively. It's getting out there and doing it enough. Too often salespeople, because they're searching for yes, would rather just somehow through maybe psychic connection or whatever, just, you know, try to figure out, okay, who's going to say yes to me? How can I tell? What are all of the signals? What are all the things? Mm-hmm. And then they will go for that yes, get it or not, but they'll cherry pick. And their quantity is very low because, again, they just want to get that yes. In our case, it's Go For No. Talk to everybody. So, example, you go and go to a networking event. You walk out with 10 business cards of people you talk to. By the time you get home and start flipping through the cards, you've already talked yourself out of not calling five of them. Like, you're already like, this is not going to go anywhere. This is going to be a waste of a conversation. I'm not going to bother. Maybe you look at a couple more and you go like, these are maybes. I'll set them aside. And then of the 10 cards, you're now down to one or two people that you can call from this networking event. And that's all designed to protect yourself from rejection. So in terms of the process, there's no perfect step-by-step process. But that said, probably the first thing to do is just to create a no awareness and to see, like, where are you now? Do you hear no at all? I mean, does your head hit the pillow and you did everything you could to protect yourself from getting rejected? Or did you have moments where you had opportunities and you went ahead and you asked and you collected either that yes or no, and you should celebrate that. So the awareness piece is really big. That's really the first step.
Yeah, that's great. And one of the things I remember from the book was, like you kind of said, count the no's. So you know, normally we set a goal of, so I'm the auto repair business. We sell, you know, auto repair and tires and alignments and stuff. And so let's say we have a goal of selling like 3 alignments a day or whatever the number is, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, if a guy's really on fire or whatever, and he sells the first 3 customers, they talk about alignments and they sell them, he could say, hey, I'm done for the day, right? I hit my 3. Instead of, if the goal was, hey, I want you to have 10 declines, right? It would be kind of this like reverse engineered game where he'd be like, they bought it, be like, oh, Don, like, that doesn't count, right? He has to like keep trying. And then eventually he asks enough times, he gets to his 10 rejections. And hopefully during that point, he sold at least 3, 4, 5, right? But it's a reverse because he's counting the no's, like you said, not, you get a bunch of yeses, but then you kind of give up because you've felt like good about yourself. So.
Exactly. And that process of doing that keeps that person in the mindset and the behavior of doing what's really important, which is suggesting the alignment, suggesting that option. And so they suggest that option and try to get 10 declines, as you said. Inevitably, if they get 10, if they go for 15 declines, they're going to get the 3 almost entirely, and they'll probably get 1 or 2 more.
Yep. And what we talk about, it's like a muscle where the more you practice something, the better you get at it. And so the more conversations we have, the more, objections they get and figure out how to handle them or how they present it, all these different things, they get better and better at presenting. And that's all the quantity, right? You do something more, you naturally get better at it.
It's a huge benefit of quantity. Yeah. Because when you don't do that, and again, you're cherry picking and you're trying to avoid those conversations, then how do you find the gaps? How do you figure out and get that opportunity to practice? Practice and experience it's so key. And I know people would rather just like, what's the quick fix? What's the easy thing? But especially in sales, because it's art and science, a lot of it is, hey, no, you have to be in this situation over and over again to where you get comfortable with it. And now you go like, oh, I know how to handle this. I know what to say.
And even from experience with, like, say on the alignment thing, like sometimes you get, a newer vehicle, right? And a lot of times that they have brand new tires. And so naturally someone says, oh, I want to talk to them about it. It's a brand new car. Mm-hmm. But we have seen, and I've known it because like we've, checked alignments on a car that has like 5,000 miles on it. It's out of alignment and they have these brand new Michelins. And what happens if they don't do anything, it prematurely wears them. And now they're spending, hundreds of dollars to replace them sooner than they would have had to if we had that conversation, right? So but you don't know those things until you talk to the people and you kind of go down this path. So I don't know, it's interesting. And I think
it is. And a lot of it is having the courage to educate, as you just said. I mean, that's like a huge part of education. And then after you educate the customer, then making the ask one more time, like, so this is why we suggest this. We're not just upselling you for no reason. This is why we suggest this. So would you like to do this today? And then if they say no, then say, great, maybe next time.
Yep.
And now they're like, you've planted the seed and they go like, yeah, probably next time, because they're right. Why would I want to replace a $400 or $500 tire?
Yep.
Down the line.
So then how do you go about like reprogramming people? So we up the quantity. How else, like what else can someone do strategically to kind of start to overcome this internal, issue they've got?
Right, right. So the reprogramming process is kind of a backwards way of changing your mind. And that is to focus on your behaviors. So instead of waiting for your attitude to change, which is, I'm just going to sit here and I want to wait until I feel not scared, very courageous, super confident. And then once I feel fabulous on all of those things, then I'll go out and I'll be ready to face rejection. Unfortunately, that does not work because you can't think your way into confidence. You have to act your way into confidence. You have to act your way into action. So using the strategy that we just talked about, this idea of setting no goals is a big one. So becoming aware of where you are now, looking at the quantities that you're getting, and then setting a goal for the number of no's you're going to get in the areas that you can get them. So it depends on your business. If you sell insurance and your goal is to sit down with 3 new prospects a week or virtually, then your goal is to get 3 appointments. If it's to sell, alignments or new tires or new battery or whatever. So you've got those kind of benchmarks. Every business is differently. For me, it's selling speaking engagements or selling a virtual training. Those are, that's my like very simple yes, no. And so it's not very complicated in terms of like what the steps are. Figure out how many no's you're going to get on a daily basis. and get out there and start doing the behaviors necessary. In other words, collecting those decisions. And it might be if you're making calls, if you're sending emails, if you're face-to-face with customers and you're able to have educate them and ask the questions and gather your no's and then celebrate when you hit those no goals instead of beating yourself up. That's a huge part of the process in changing your mindset. Reward yourself for your activity. Do anything that you can to celebrate. I mean, it can be something like treat yourself, but not only, you know, not always rewarding yourself for the yeses, which we all love to reward ourselves for the yeses.
But the no's too.
The no's as well. Yeah. It's got to be as equal as a yes because it has to do with activity. And when you recognize that yes and no are just opposite sides of the same coin, that you're going to get more when you increase the other one, then down the line, if you continue that behavior because you've rewarded yourself for the activity, that's where the reprogramming process takes place. That's when your brain finally gets it. It's kind of like, you know, we say you can't lead a horse to water, make him drink. So we're saying, well, you're the horse. You've got to drag yourself kicking and screaming to the water. You've got to drink it and then reward yourself after. And then if you do that and you reward yourself after, that's how that behavior continues. But it doesn't start with attitude. You can't wait until you want to. You can't wait until you feel like it. And you certainly can't wait until you feel courageous and confident.
Yep. Yep. So, you know, I follow you on Twitter and I saw, I think it was a week or so ago, you had told the story about when you first launched the book. And what your expectation was and then how it completely didn't go as planned. Can you tell that story?
Yeah. So we wrote Go For No in 2000. We ordered and we self-published, which means that we did everything ourselves. We created the guts of the book. We created the cover. We sent it off to a printer. Today, you can go on Amazon and upload your book and Amazon will literally send you back like an actual book. It's amazing. Called Print on Demand. Right. Back then, you had to go to what they call like a vanity press or an offset printer. And you can't just order one copy of your book. I mean, you have to get minimum 100, ideally several thousand. So we ordered 5,000 copies of this book and we're thinking it's going to do well. So our marketing plan is let's take 500 copies. Let's send them out to all the kind of influencers. We bought a mailing list. We got VP of sales, VP of training and all the big companies, insurance, financial, manufacturing, retail. So we send all these copies out and we're waiting for the orders and the orders don't come in. We got one and we're thinking now, Rich is convinced. He's like, oh my gosh, the post office, they threw him in the trash. I'm like, no, they didn't do that. Yeah. We got one order though for 50 copies. So we were like, well, that's exciting. But that also means that we got 499 no's. Does this bode well for this book? And we're kind of concerned. Well, we now struggle for the next 4 or 5 years. We're like marketing it and it's just not taking off. Of course, it's really hard to sell a book. I mean, this is like before e-commerce really. Yep. And Amazon had barely really begun. And it was all grassroots, us calling, us getting permission to send people books. Finally, we go to this conference. We hand copies out to different people. We give this guy, I overheard he was in sales. We give him a copy. He calls us a couple days later and he says, and you know, are you guys open-minded? And we were like, yeah, sure. And he goes, well, you've written a fabulous sales book. He's like, it's one of the best I've ever read. And I've read all of them. And he goes, but I have to give you some feedback. And we said, yeah, what? And he goes, well, you have the worst cover in the history of publishing. And we go, really? Okay. And he goes, but if you guys are willing to change it, I would like to buy 5,000 copies from you. And we were like, yes, okay, we will change it. Don't worry. So we hired a professional cover designer instead of bootstrapping it like we normally would do back then. And which we now understand. Yeah, you hire a professional cover designer. We get it. Hired him, redesigned the cover. The guy bought the copies. And now we had like a confidence, a greater confidence even. And we continued to push, but it didn't just all of a sudden overnight turn into a sales success. We spent another 5 years really just doing the same things, just connecting with people, sending copies. Every now and then we get an order for 10 or 20 copies here or there. And then finally, we put it on Amazon in 2007. And then it finally hit the sale number one in the sales category at the end of 2010.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It's like an overnight success that took 10 years, right?
Yes. Yes. And, you know, we believed in it and we got just enough feedback in little crumbs here and there year after year to not give up on it. I mean, you know, it's hard when you're not getting anything, when it's just crickets and you just think there's nothing out here. But also, I think when you persist, there's a thing called a tipping point. And it just becomes this thing where enough people read it, enough people talk about it. And now at this point, we've worked so hard at building this brand that if you're in sales, I mean, even some of my family members have told me they've walked in people's offices and they've seen some Go for No on someone's shelf, which is like amazing to me because we're still not in bookstores. We're still under the radar, but it's just finally reached this tipping point where a lot of people know about it.
Yeah. So do you see a lot of your orders from like big corporations or people buying quantities for their teams versus just one or two at a time?
Both. I mean, because we sell a lot of copies on Amazon, which I think the majority of them probably, single orders. But for the orders that we get, yeah, we sell a lot of books to teams. We have a 10-pack, which has a couple dollars off. So it's like a special deal. It's like $99.50 for a pack of 10. And we sell a lot of those because we have a lot of people who give them as gifts. And we have a lot of people who, you know, they have small teams. So it's just an easy thing to give. And it's also a small book, so it's easy to consume.
Yeah, it's like 80 pages or something, right?
And exactly.
It's a quick story. It's an easy read. And it's, like I said, it's kind of fun. It's a fictional story about a copy salesman who I assume is based on the suit salesman, right?
Exactly. Yep. Yes, because we have the suit story in there, but we wanted a average guy. You know, nothing. He's not exceptional because we didn't want people to think, oh, I have to be in order to do this and pull this off, I've got to be exceptional. We actually wanted him to like kind of fear rejection, like we all do. And Richard and I, by the way, need Go for No just as much, if not more, than other people because we're not naturals at this. If we were natural, like there's about I think I've decided with all of our experience, there's about 1% out there who are completely fearless when it comes to rejection. They love it. And they're the ones that always love to come up to us after we speak. I mean, if there's a room of 1,000 people, this one person will walk up and say like, I loved your presentation. I'm so glad you guys were here for everyone else. I have no problem with rejection. I get rejected. It just goes right off my shoulder, water off a duck's back. I have no problem with it. But other people need it.
That's awesome. Yeah. So can you talk to me about the Go for No challenge? What's that?
Yeah. So we, during the pandemic, since we were sitting around like everyone going like, what do? We decided that we would create a workbook. So we made this workbook called the 21 Day Challenge. It's got a full old school tracking sheet where you write down the number of no's so you can set a no goal, count your no's. It asks you to track a few different things. There's a spot for notes and all this. So we create this workbook in 2020. And I think it's a great tool, but this year I decided to bring the Go for No challenge to life. So I created this little mini coaching group that I did. I think I did 5 of them so far this year, where I got a group of 15 to 20 people where we all did a challenge simultaneously together. So we start off talking about the challenge and getting people prepared. And then we meet at day 7 and day 14. And then at the end to get people's experiences and what it was like for them as kind of just to kind of have them do it and not be alone, you know, where you're just working your worksheet and you have like no one to.
It's accountability group.
It's an accountability group. Yeah. And it's a kind of a feedback group. So you can come in and hear what everybody else is doing. And we had people doing like all kinds of interesting things with it. I mean, I think in every group, no one had like the same thing. You know, we'd have like an insurance person. We have somebody in like a mortgages. We had a guy in car rental. He was using Go for No, you know, renting out cars. We just had like all these people. We had personal coaching and all these interesting people. But the things that I think were the challenge, what I have found that was the challenge for me to help people through was really creating it as a habit. That's the really tough part, because in my head, I think, well, go for no is just selling. Like, if you're selling, then you're going for no. So are you guys not selling? Is that what's going on here? I think that's a big part of it, is that making it a habit and not letting the income producing activities that you should be doing just kind of go out the door. And then all you do is just administrative stuff. You put out fires, you deal with current accounts, and you're not building your business in any way. So that's probably the biggest thing that I think people had the wake up call of. You have these expectations. You want these kind of goals. You want this, you want to have this kind of income. You want to make these kind of sales, but your productivity, I mean, you want to get an A+ in this class, but your activity is like a D. You're not putting in the time,
the calls.
Like, you're not doing the work. Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yep. So, so you run it, is that live now? Like, what's the schedule for that? Are you bringing it back?
So I'm bringing it back in the fall. Definitely. So I will have, and because it's only 21 days, I run them like about every month. So I'll do one for 21 days, take a week off, and then have another one start.
Okay. That's so awesome.
Yeah, they're kind of cool. I think it's just, I think having that group accountability and the support from other people was really fun.
So of how many people were in the group?
15 to 20.
Okay. And then how many of them do you think, like did they see the results? Like did they report back to say, hey, like I got whatever their goal was. Did you see progress on it?
Oh yeah. And interesting progress. And a lot of people had, you know, everybody has different epiphanies. I mean, a couple people actually had huge epiphanies as to why they had such a problem with rejection. Like what it was about. One lady, it had to do with her grandfather and how she watched him and how he was somebody who never asked. I mean, that's not what you did. You just don't be pushy. Don't ever ask. And she realized how stressed she was with the thought of sharing. She was a photographer, and how hard it was selling her services, and how she realized what was holding her back. So people have like emotional epiphanies. I had one woman who just knocked it out of the park. She was just like on fire. She just was so productive every day. You know, and then I had other people who still struggled. It's like they want to be in the group. They want that development by osmosis. They want something to change, but I can only do so much. I always say, you know, I can't move in with you. That is really expensive. And I love good food. So it's going to cost so much to have me there. Not even worth it. Probably not even worth it. So, you know, it's challenging to watch people who struggle, because I know there's something going on. There's reasons why they're procrastinating. There's reasons why they're holding themselves back. But I don't even have time to really go into some of that. But the challenge, I think, is a good wake-up call for them to say, okay, I'm the one who's really holding back my progress, because this is a really simple process and I'm overcomplicating it.
Yep. And a lot of it too is, I think the accountability is huge. I'm in a group of other entrepreneurs, like-minded people, and a big part of that's accountability. And also then surrounding yourself with other, you know, like-minded people. Because, you know, you see them doing cool stuff and you just think to yourself, hey, why not me? Like, that guy's not any smarter, better, like, but what he takes action, he's focused, he's disciplined, like, you know, but I can do all those things. Those are free, right? And so I think for a lot of people, it's, you know, finding that group, whether it's an online community or a local community or whatever, of like-minded people who can support each other. And your thing's probably a great primer to get them into that. And then it's kind of moving into finding the, you know, some sort of like permanent mastermind or whatever you want to call it, that that can help people support.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. Yep.
So awesome. So where can people connect with you? Obviously, you can find the book Go For No on Amazon, but where can they connect to you, find out more about this challenge or anything else going on?
Yeah, come to goforno.com, sign up for our motivational email that we send out once a month. we have a fun quiz on our website where you can take a 20-question assessment to see where your mindset is. It's a very tricky quiz. I'm just going to say that. There's some trick questions in there, but it will make you think. It will give you your score and make you think about, you know, how you internalize failure and rejection.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thanks for hopping on the podcast here. You know, I appreciate it. And, you know, thanks for writing the book. I said it's one of my favorite, and I'm probably going to go back and reread it now again. So
absolutely, Brian. Yeah. And thanks for asking me. I was so glad that you did on Twitter.
There you go. Yep. Twitter's a lot of things going on there. I see you got a good following and post a lot of good stuff there. So
thank you.
We'll link it all in the show notes for people as well.
Cool.
All right. I'll see you.
All right. Thanks.
That's all we got for this episode with the Business with Beers podcast. One thing that would really help both us and other new potential listeners is to rate the show and leave a comment in iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you listen. Also, make sure to link up with me on your preferred social media platforms, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find all my links at brianbeers.com. Please just share the podcast with anyone who you think might enjoy it. And until next time, remember to take the actions others won't to live the life that others don't.